This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP President, Money Manager, Steve Peasley.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with me today. Whether you're listening to us on the radio in California or streaming live on InvestTalk.com or subscribing to our podcast, I always appreciate you being here. So, thank you very much. If you ask many financial planners, how do I get rich? You're going to get a bunch of different answers, right? But one of the main ways you can get rich is saving. Saving. Of course, taking that savings and investing is the second most important way to get rich. And there's no question, though, saving consistently over a long period of time of your working life is the way you're going to get rich. You got to be consistent about it, but you got to also, you can't just put the money in a mattress. You can't do that either. You have to, if you did that, look how much inflation would eat into it. You've got to grow that money. You've got to. You know, yesterday, Justin was preaching to you about budgeting, and without it, you're really, lost in the woods. Maybe you'll find your way out, maybe, but you're lost. You're lost in that woods. But when you get into saving money, the question, of course, is how much are you saving? Are you saving 3%? That's not nearly enough. You need to save about 10% of your income. Now, if the average household income is $52,000, over the working life, if someone saved that much money, and then it returned 6.86%, Now, why did I pick 6.86%? Because if you go all the way back to the time that we started counting, 1871, what the market has returned, that is what it has returned. By the time you retire, you have $745,000 in today's dollars. Not bad, huh? Average income of $52,000, saving 10%. Now, can you save 10%? Well, this day and age, maybe your employer is helping you match. Maybe he's, getting you up to that 10% range. Whatever you have to do, you have to do. You have to do it. Now, maybe you have some experience you'd like to share with us. I'd like to hear it. It's time to get your voice in on the program. 888-99-CHARGE, the quickest way. And let's move and take a question. This one came in after last night's program. 888-99-CHARGE.
I have a question about index funds. And I would appreciate if you would explain what an index fund is, what are the different kinds of index funds, how would you compare them to a mutual fund or an individual stock, and what are the advantages or disadvantages of buying the index fund. Thank you very much. I love your show, and it's very educational. Thank you very much again.
In actuality, that's a very good question. What is an index fund? An index fund, or an index, is tracking a group of stocks. Now, what particular group of stocks? Well, there's 100 different indexes out there. The Dow Industrial 30 Index, the Dow, that's only 30 companies, 30 very large companies. It's only 30 companies out of the 8,000, 9,000 companies that are traded. So it's very, very narrow. The S&P 500 is 500, basically, of the largest companies in the market. That's pretty narrow, too, but that's what people hear on the news. The Dow is up. The S&P is up. The NASDAQ is up. What's the NASDAQ? NASDAQ is, if they're tracking the NASDAQ 100, that's only 100 stocks. Now, they also have other indexes. The Russell indexes. Russell 2000 is one I've talked about quite frequently. Is the small company stocks, but it's 2,000 of them. There's a Russell 3000, which is the bigger company stocks. That's what an index does. It tracks a certain set of stocks. The New York Stock Exchange, NYSE index, is a much broader base market index. But they're not been around there long enough. The Dow is the oldest one, so they use that. What is the advantage of buying an index? Well, you get all that diversification, all those stocks and those indexes that you're investing in. So it gives you instant diversification. You're not relying on just one stock, because one stock could do anything. But a whole index, you know, moves much slower, up and down. You can buy an index with a mutual fund. There's a lot of mutual funds that just track indexes. There's ETFs that just track indexes. And there's mutual funds and ETFs that track all different types of sectors and pieces and bits of the market. So it gets complex, everybody. It always gets complex. It's not a simple thing, but it's a very good question. I appreciate the question. I really do. Now, are target dated funds steering you in the wrong direction or steering you to a disaster? Target dated funds, you know how I feel about them. I'm not keen on them. But if you're going to invest them, you got to invest them in them in the right way. And that's going to be one of our talking points today. Panic selling. You saw the market today. Panic selling is good for the market, isn't it? Isn't it good for the market? It may be painful at the time it's happening. We're going to talk about that. Retail sales in November likely have picked up despite the slow Black Friday weekend. Retail sales. I think we need to talk about it because the number's coming out on Thursday for November. I think we need to discuss it. Remember, why retail sales are so important? Because our economy is 60-70% driven by the consumer and what the consumer does. Spending by the consumer. It's extremely important. And rising risks in the stock market. I have filtered them down to maybe 3 or 4. What are the risks? And I have 10 risks in the stock market, but you know, some of them are kind of almost overlapping a little bit. So I'm going to talk about that. Was something I was going to discuss last week, last Friday, and I didn't get to it, but I wanted to. John in Oceanside. How you doing, John?
I'm very good. My question is, I heard this rumor. If you buy a stock that is interest and you reinvest the interest and hold on to that stock, eventually you get rich. Is that true?
Well, that's kind of a broad statement. When you say you're talking about dividends, right? When you buy a stock and it pays dividend. I'll tell you this. Dividends make up about 30 to 40% of the return of the S&P 500 over the last 100 years. Dividends are very, very important. So when you reinvest them, the answer is it will help greatly get you rich. But you have to buy the right dividend-paying stocks. You can't buy a stock that goes out of business in 20 years or 10 years.
Like ExxonMobil?
ExxonMobil is a perfect example. It's going to last forever. You can buy a couple of drug companies, you know, that pay very high dividends. You also want to buy companies that are growing, you know, growing their earnings and growing their dividends. So it's not just paying the dividends, but also increasing the dividends. So, John, you could build like a little portfolio of these high dividend-paying, growing companies, and you'll do very well over time.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I have a 401k from a former employer that I'm in the process of rolling over to an IRA with my current broker. However, my broker won't do anything but give me basically house the rollover IRA, as I'm sure is normal. My question is, what do I do with the funds? I have no clue on how to pick the right mutual funds or if, you know, what kind of distribution of the funds I should be looking at as far as diversity.
How old are you, Mike?
Mid-30s.
Okay, so being young, you want to kind of be aggressive. I know it's been very frightening being aggressive the last 10 years, but still, you got lots of years. What to actually pick? If you don't know how to pick individual stocks, Mike, I probably would stick with ETFs, exchange-traded funds. And I'd probably, if I were you, I'd put maybe 15% of that money in foreign ETFs. You know, they have some, maybe not in Europe. I don't suggest Europe, but maybe Asia, different parts of Asia. They have EWA, which is Australia. EWT is Taiwan. FXI is China. EWS is Singapore. EWH is Hong Kong. You know, you could put a little bit in each one of those. You know, that would be your foreign exposure. Then for your domestic exposure, you know, you probably would want to do QQQQ with this NASDAQ 100, which is kind of tech. So put some there. And I would just go to the ETS and buy a number of index funds and maybe some specialty medical, a little bit, especially medical, specialty energy, and maybe specialty tech, those three areas.
Okay, so international index funds, technology index funds, and medical.
I would put some in the S&P 500, you know, for a broad-based market, and buy a little bit on dips. Don't put it all to work at one time. Just kind of step into it. As the market goes down, if it goes down, you want to buy more, not less.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mike. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Well, I want to talk about whatever's on your mind, but I got stuff I can bring up. I'm perfectly happy to do that. So one of the things I'd like to bring up, why isn't the U.S. debt a problem? Why is no one talking about it anymore? You notice it's not, it hasn't been in the news for weeks or months. No one's even care. Why? Hopefully I can get to that. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHARGE, how you reach us. You can do it right now. Your money topic on Invest Talk.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Fred in San Diego. How are you doing, Fred?
Hi. I would like to know, are there any general guidelines for setting a hedge position? Take a generic one. In other words, what I'm concerned about is how to set those proportions. Would it have anything to do with the proportion of the numeric risk at the time you set it? In other words, for example, if you want to set a hedge for the index of the S&P or the NDX, how would you proportion it?
For everybody else, let's make sure we understand what the hedge means. A hedge, everybody, means that you're in a position and you want to protect it from going down. Most common hedges are they're in a position, you made a lot of money, it's been going up, and you want to hedge it or hedge the whole portfolio against a fall in the market. So that means you put on positions that will go up when everything, it goes in the opposite direction is what it wants to do. So Fred's asking, well, is there rules as to how much of a hedge?
Yes. In other words, how much would you put into going long or short to create that hedge?
Okay.
Would it have anything to do with what you assess the risk, numeric risk at that time would be? In other words, if you assess that the numeric risk is 3 going long and 1 going short, would it have anything to do with that?
There's many ways to hedge. You can hedge with options.
Oh, yeah. Just take a generic, long-short position, which can be done with the ETFs.
Well, let's say you feel that the odds of the market are going up or continuing to go up are very strong. You have to determine that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Just say you think it's 3-1. In that situation, you wouldn't want to put more than 25% a short position. For instance, let's say you have a portfolio of stocks that you like and you still think they're going to go up, but you're worried about the overall market. You can short the overall market but still hold on to your positions because some of them still may go up, but even though the market goes down. But how much is that is basically what you think the risk is.
But there's no general guidelines.
No.
Okay.
It's all individual and how much risk are you comfortable with.
Okay.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate the call. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Don in Pleasant Hill, listening to us on AM 1220. How you doing, Don?
Really well. Yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Yes, yes, yes. I thought I understood what I was talking about, but apparently I don't. What is the relationship between fracking and the oil companies going down? Fracking, to me, was natural gas, and oil, to me, would be a different commodity. Am I off base on that?
Yeah, fracking is both oil and natural gas. It's both. Don't separate them in your mind. Fracking produces both. Sometimes they're fracking for oil, and sometimes they're fracking for natural gas. And most of the time, they get both, okay? But, yeah, and why oil is collapsing, I mean, if you want to know that, is because fracking is so successful. and demand has been slowing.
Which creates a glut.
Yeah, creates a glut. And you got Europe who's slowing down and China who's slowing its growth. We got a glut worldwide in oil. And then you have the OPEC countries saying, you know what, we're not going to slow down our production. We're not going to slow it down. I think they want to try to put fracking under pressure by dropping the price of oil.
So that is going to be hurting the oil-producing fracking side of things, but
yes,
the natural gas fracking side of things will still be going on.
Correct. I don't think it's going to really hurt them too much, really. Okay, Don?
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. And that's one of the reasons. Well, see, remember, there's a lot of small companies fracking out there on the shale areas. And those small companies are funding themselves by junk bonds, issuing bonds, low-grade bonds. And if you look at the junk bonds, you'll see that those things have been falling apart because if oil prices go down, those small companies that are utilizing loans to try to produce oil probably are not going to be able to pay back all those loans. You see how it feeds into each other? And just think about this. You don't think OPEC knows that? Of course they know it. They're hoping that there will be next year or the year after. I don't think they may be wrong, but they're hoping that production will slow and thus oil prices will start to firm up and go back up. That's kind of their hope. Now, they won't say that. Yeah, you're not going to get that. But I don't think, you know, I talked about it on the show, I don't know if that's going to work. Yes, it'll slow down production because they will slow down drilling. It will lower the price of oil. It's natural. It's going to happen. But will it do it enough to help those countries? I don't know.
Did you get your dose of Steve today? Steve Peasley's market commentary can't always put things right in the market, but it can put things into perspective. They're for you every morning on InvestTalk.com.
Panic selling, is it good for the market? Do you see panic selling? I don't see it. I see a big down day of 266 points. I saw a big volatile day yesterday too. But when you look at the volume, I don't see panic. Breath tells you it. I'm kind of thinking it's setting itself up for a good rally market. Now, I don't know how deep this little panic selling or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if we can call it panic selling. I don't know how deep and how far it's going to go down. You know, so far it's been led by oil. So we'll have to see. It's not. If you remember right, the correction we had that was in October, that was really caused by worry about a world growth slowdown. That's what that was really caused by, if you remember. And maybe that's creeping back into the investors, the market's thought process. Slow down world. Why is oil going down so much? The whole world is slowing down. Or there's a glut, just as we just talked about with Don. So is the whole world going to slow down? Is that going to affect our economy? That's the worry. Good. It's going to affect us. You know, if Europe and China slow down, it will affect us. But our major trading partners are Canada and Mexico, not Europe and China. But it will affect us. It's a question of degree, how much. And you know what? So far, even while they're struggling, we're still, you know, the exports have fallen 7% last month, but they're not collapsing. Why are they falling? Probably because more likely our dollar is going up and we're attracting more investments in our country because we look like the strong person in the world, the strong economy in the world. So, you know, you want to put your money where there's strength. And that's what's happened. European money, Chinese money coming over here. So I just can't say we see panic selling at this point. I don't think you should assume that or worry about that. Not yet. We do see some violations. It's like what you're seeing is like the first little red flag out there. Oh, be careful. Looks like we're having some problems. But, you know, that little red flag could easily go away and quickly. I think we should expect some volatility. I think we're going to see a lot more volatility next year. More so we've had this year and more so than we had last year. Last year we had very little. This year we had more. But I think, and you know what? It looks like it's just returning to more of a normal volatility situation. And we haven't been used to it for some time. Interesting. I love this stuff. Why are you spending more and more on your cell phones? InvestTalk Personal is coming up next in the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley. I'm here to answer your money questions, and you call at 888-99-CHART.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Our podcast listeners are from all over the world, and they download our program, which is really great. For those long-distance listeners who listen at their own schedule, we have our 24-hour listener line, which you can call anytime, 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Rick in San Diego. How are you doing, Rick?
Oh, good, good.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. I went to a hard assets conference a while ago, and some of the guys were talking about, instead of buying stocks, to buy warrants.
Yes.
And I'm not exactly sure what warrants are.
Warrants are a right to buy a stock. Okay, so many times when a company takes over or there's a rights offering, you might get, okay, we're going to give you an IPO. They may give you, okay, we're going to give you 1,000 shares. You can buy 1,000 shares, and we're going to give you warrants to buy another 1,000 shares. And the warrant itself can be traded based on what the value of the company is. They're not common. It's more uncommon. A warrant is a right to buy more shares of a particular company.
Are they risky, advisable, or what's your rough opinion?
Yeah, well, warrants, unlike options, it's not like you have the right to buy it at a certain price. It's not like that. It's the right to buy it. Okay.
So it's the right to buy it at the price it is at the time you decide to buy it.
Some of the time you could do it that. There are warrants that you can buy it within a certain period of time. There's a warrant. See, it depends on the warrant.
Do they expire?
Yes, they do. Some expire. Most of them expire, the ones I've seen, but some last forever, too.
So there could be a time decay on some.
It could be, yes. A lot of times people want, you know, I want 1,000 shares like an IPO, and then I want the right to buy more because you may not have enough right now because it's oversubscribed. More people want it than there are available. Another way it happens is one company A buys company B, it gives you the right to buy more shares of the company that bought.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Warrants, everybody. It's not too common. You hear more about options, call options and put options, and that gives you the right to buy or sell a stock at a certain price in a certain time frame. Warrants don't work that way.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to JP in San Francisco. How are you doing, JP?
Hey, I got a question. You know how whenever you talk to a finance radio talk show,
uh-huh.
They always talk about how analysts is like they're just pumping up stocks.
They're usually wrong.
So I mean,
they're not always wrong, but they're usually wrong.
But majority of the time, they're wrong.
Right. I would say more than 50%.
So what about using as a strategy, just going opposite what they always talk about?
Yeah, that might be a good strategy. I've never thought about that. What I have noticed is what happens is they're usually wrong. It's the degree of how wrong they're going to be. Someone did a study. I read this a few months back from the very initial looking at a stock. In other words, let's say eBay came out with earnings tonight, and now the analysts are going to be predicting what they're going to do next quarter. From this point right now, they're usually off, according to this article, about 40%.
Wow.
But what they do is they keep changing their numbers as the quarter goes by. So even at the very end, they're still wrong. They're just not as wrong as they were before. Now, that could be wrong high or low. You never know how which side of the coin they're going to be wrong on. So that's the problem.
That's interesting. All right, good enough. Thank you.
InvestTalk Personal, about the everyday money decisions we make that have lasting impact. Why are we spending more and more on cell phones? The average monthly cell phone bill has soared in recent years to well over $100. A study earlier this year found that Verizon was the most expensive carrier, believe it or not, with an average customer bill of $148 a month. Now, that might be because they might be most expensive because people are, you know, they're the best. That might be. Their services are so good, people want to buy them. And, you know, so don't equate expensive with, well, I can get it cheaper somewhere else. Maybe you don't want to. There are more and more handful of reasons, okay? There are more than a handful of reasons. One is taxes are up. Do you know you pay 17% of taxes on your phone bill? Federal, state, local taxes and fees, 17%. On our dollar bill, that's $17 goes to the Uncle Sam and everybody else, all the other people. And fees are sneaking in. The cell phone companies are sneaking in fees like activation fees. So we're and plus, you know, we are eating up more and more data. We're doing more and more things in the phone, and it takes power to do that. It takes bandwidth that the companies have to pay for, so they have to pass that along. And you're not seeing too many unlimited plans anymore. Flat rates, unlimited plans, you're not. Another reason why, more and more children are clamoring for smartphones to play with or make phone calls. Many plans have three or more phones on them these days. Of course, that's going to drive up the monthly bill. And we're getting rid of our landlines at the same time. So what do? Look for cheaper services. Choose a lower cost, simpler phone. Cut back on usage. Those things you can do. I don't see that happening, though. I really don't. Maybe a cheaper service. That's InvestTalk Personal. If there's an investment topic you'd like to know more about, let me know. Just go to InvestTalk.com. Click on the Contact Justin or Contact Steve button there. And at eight, or you can call 888-99-CHART and just leave a message.
Why not sign up to be an InvestTalk insider? If you missed our last webinar, a virtual retirement checklist, including easy-to-follow directions on how to use some new free online software, you can watch and replay when you're ready. It's there for all InvestTalk insiders. Sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Jack in Oceanside. How you doing, Jack?
The other day I was watching CNBC, and they had an executive on representing a company called Square, and they've partnered up with Twitter, and they have a service where you put this little Square device on your cell phone, and it's a credit card reader.
Yep.
And it allows you to make credit card charges. Or
on your cell phone or your iPad?
Yes. So he was saying that the company Square and Twitter trade on the secondary market. What does that mean? And is this the public allowed to invest in companies that are on the secondary market?
We ordered that little device today.
Today.
So it's kind of interesting that you're talking to us about it. I like that little darn device.
I was interested in that service because this is the type of technology that will allow us to eventually become a cashless society.
It's the next step.
In other words, I could be at a garage sale and I want to buy something, and all I have to do is the the person has this attachment on their cell phone. I swipe my credit card, and it could be a $10 purchase or a $5 purchase.
Yeah, an attachment, by the way, is free.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the Federal Reserve, they would like nothing better than not to have to deal with the nuisance of paper money.
Yeah.
But in any event, they said that these two stocks trade, Twitter and Square, trade on the secondary market. Is that available to the public?
It's not trade on any exchange, obviously, because that's what the secondary market is. But it's just along the lines of Facebook and a lot of these other social networks and technology companies that their shares are trading hands privately, and there are brokers out there. I don't know any off the top of my head because we don't deal in that market. But there are brokers out there that will find the shares for you and, you know, get them. But you tend to have a lot of money. You can't just throw a couple $1,000 at
it. Yeah, Jack, you and I don't know, maybe you are, but I'm not rich enough. They want to sell you a 10 million shares or a million shares or, you know, half a million shares. You know, it's big blocks.
These shares tend to be exchanged to large institutions, giant hedge funds, other companies that are looking to take a strategic stake in those type of companies.
And you have to determine what's the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a negotiation. It's like a haggle. I'll give you $12 a share. No, I want $72 a share.
Yeah, and what does that equate to when it comes to the total market cap of the company? It's difficult, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, let's talk about, I want to discuss 401ks with target-dated funds. Now, I'm not a big fan of target-dated funds, but apparently people are using them incorrectly. Target-dated funds are supposed to be, you are a certain age and you're retiring 20 years from today. That means you buy a target-dated fund 2035. Okay, because it's almost 2015. 20 years. That's the concept. Whatever your retirement date is when you pick the date. A lot of people are not even doing that. Remember, I don't really care for them that much. But you're not using them the way they're designed. And if you're not going to use them for the way they're designed, it even becomes a worse investment. And this is not something where I'm making up. There was a study that showed that's exactly what people are doing. A lot of people. 38% of savers investing in target-dated funds are using them as a one-stop investment, according to Aon Hewitt Financial Engines. Well, that's fine. But a very large percentage of them are not picking the right target date. Why? They're trying to manipulate it somehow, or they don't know. I don't really know why. I mean, they don't really. They're saying from 2010 to 2012, partial target date fund users earned a medium of 2.1% less each year after fees were taken into account than those in the same age group who invested at least 95% of their portfolio in the appropriate target dated funds. You're making less money because you're not in the right one. I don't care for target date funds. I've said that several times. I'll keep saying I don't. And you've heard my reasons. But if you're going to use them, try to use them correctly in your 401k. Use it based on what your retirement is. Now, I have specific reasons why I don't like them. And if you want to know what them, you can email me or ask me the question on the air, and I'll tell you. I've said it over and over and over again, so I don't want to beat a dead horse. How about a good money-saving idea for your boss? Here's a way to reduce administrative costs and enhance the employee benefit package. It's called the 401k solution from us, KPP Financial. You can get all the material you need and pass along to your employer by going to investtalk.com. InvestTalk.com, two T's, and click on Contact Justin and write in 401k. We'll have a packet of information that will give you some good options.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday. And one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
I'm a trustee of a family member who passed away. There are some bonds in there, and of course these are individual bonds. They couldn't be dispersed individually, obviously. They had to be sold. Actually, I just talked to the Wells Fargo advisors today. Apparently one of the bonds didn't sell because they're, even though it doesn't mature till 2018, there was a call on it. And the first call came in 5/7, and they said they thought it'd be called, but it wasn't. And they moved that call date up, and so apparently people aren't willing to go out and buy this thing now because of this call thing. I guess my thing is it can't be dispersed like it is. Can they just continually to move this call date up until they think they want to go ahead and buy it back and refinance at a lower interest or what?
Yes, they can. The answer to that is yes, they can. I hate callable bonds. It's one of the, I don't want to say I hate them. I try to avoid them because of the call part. I don't like that. He's just described one of the problems you have. If you want to sell a bond and it's callable and they've already called it, but doesn't mean that remember, they're not calling necessarily every bond that's callable. Maybe they're saying of the $100 million in callable bonds, we want to call in 50 million of them. Well, which 50 million? Who owns them? What if they get the 50 million and yours didn't get called? You still have a call date. Now, no one's wants your bond because they feel it might be called. See, so bonds are not as liquid as stocks. Now, that's why you hear me say, buy bonds and hold them to maturity. Just assume that you're going to hold them to maturity, buy them with the intent to hold them to maturity, but then you get this situation. This poor guy, is an executive estate. He's got to liquidate these assets so he can pay, and he's not able to do it. He's having trouble doing it. I would call the broker and explain the situation, what may happen if it's a big brokerage firm. They may buy it from you. Okay? They may not give you the greatest price, but they might buy it from you and hold it in their own portfolio. And especially if you have a good working relationship, you may not because you inherited these things, but that's what I would do. Say, look, I'm an executor. I need to liquidate this. How can I get rid of this? I think that would be your only solution, because these broker firms can buy these and hold them in their portfolio. Let them worry about it. They'll do it. They just won't give you a good price. Here's our InvestTalk definition of the day. GNP, gross national product. GNP is a measure of a country's economic performance or what its citizens produce, i.e. goods and services, and whether they produce these items within its border. GNP. Do you have a question about an investment term or economic term? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. We're moving into the last segment of the hour. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we can get your question in. There's a line open. You can call 888-99-CHART.
Are there special rules when you're investing in growth stocks? Or what's your question? Why not ask it right now at 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Thanks for being a podcast subscriber. And even though you listen after our daily production time, you can still be part of the discussion. Your questions and comments set the tone and the topics, so please participate. Just call 888-99-CHART anytime. And if you'd like to talk live to Steve and Justin, just make that call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Retail sales in November are likely to have picked up. We're going to get that report coming out tomorrow, I think it is. Thursday? Yeah, Thursday. The Black Friday weekend was not very good. It was down like 11%. But the reason why it was down 11% was twofold. First, many of the bigger companies, Walmart and Target, they started their sales way before Black Friday. So if you talk about the whole month of November, it's probably going to pick up about 0.4%. But if you take out autos, it's probably only going to be up 0.1%. And most people are going to say, oh, that's not very good. And they'd be wrong. Why would they be wrong? Why? Very, very simple answer. Part of retail sales is gasoline prices. Right? That's retail sales. So that retail sales actually went down if you count gasoline sales. I mean it didn't go only up 0.1%. Now this is the estimates, by the way, so we're not sure what it's going to be until we get the report. But when you talk about gasoline prices and gasoline, for every 1 cent that goes down in gasoline prices, that represents about $1 billion in household energy consumption down, less. And so gasoline has fallen about $1 a gallon since June. That dollar gallon, what does that mean? That means it's about $90 billion over the next couple of quarters extra in people's pockets. Yes, it shows up as less retail sales, but now they have more money to buy something else. Right? So if gasoline prices stay low for a longer period of time, and I think they are for a longer period of time, that's only going to be beneficial to our economy. It's like a tax break, and a decent-sized tax break at that. The lower the oil prices, the more money in the consumer's pocket. Now, remember, there's always the yin and yang. The lower the oil prices, the more volatile the stock market's going to be, the more scared it will be. The more oil companies that are marginal, small ones, are going to go out of business, hurting employment on that industry. There's always good and plus and minuses, but I think this is a much bigger plus overall for the economy than a minus. I think that. And you know, it's their own success is hurting them. And we can easily be oil independent if we wanted to be. We could easily be there in 10 years or so, because we're increasing more and more and more. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to export some of it. And I know people are up in arms, export it? No. Oil's priced internationally at international prices. You know, we want to export more. We do. Right now, you cannot export oil. Did you know that? The United States cannot export oil. They can export refined products, and of course they cheat a little bit. How much? What's the refined product? How refined? Just a little bit refined? See? But I'm just saying, it's just a lot of export oil at this point.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is InvestTalk.
The rising risk in the stock market, Washington politics. You know there's going to be fighting. There always is. Rising interest rates. The Fed has said they're targeting interest rate rise maybe next year or the year after. They won't tell you exactly. And slowing growth internationally and possibly domestically. Those are things that are going to worry the stock market. The three major things that could affect the stock market. And I do think those are going to result in more volatility. But remember, the market, slowing growth, the economy has some good momentum going forward. I do think we're going to have GDP growth, and I think it's going to be a little bit better next year than this year. Could not be. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I think it might. Before we close for the hour, be sure to sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider. One of the benefits are regular watch lists, like one on large energy stocks. A list that are big worldwide integrated energy plays that might be setting themselves up for a good buy, especially if you're looking for dividends. You buy things when they're cheap, maybe not yet. So sign up for free at investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.